Living as you do here in a college town, perhaps you have experienced a scene such as this one. It was a Saturday evening. I was working, maybe on a paper, maybe more realistically on a sermon. I was sitting in a coffee bar, and around me, tables filled up. People began to engage in conversation. And a gathering of young people, maybe in their early to mid-20s, led by a particular man, began to attract attention throughout the establishment. This man, I came to know, his name was Josh. He was a youth pastor in the town of Lawrence, Kansas, where I lived. He was the new parent of an infant. He was loud. From my seat at an adjacent table, it became impossible to tune him out, and his topic that evening was birth control. He finally leaned back in his chair, crossed his Chuck Taylors, raised his arms above his head for emphasis, and pronounced, "There are only three reasons for using birth control: covering for sin, selfishness, and fear of God's will." One of the young women at that table immediately began to challenge this, and youth pastor Josh, gesturing a down motion with his palm. Oh no, he didn't. But he did. He talked over her, saying with an indulgent chuckle, "Wait now, let me explain." And he did. Josh opined that women have an obligation to trust that everything that happens is God's will, and also to remember that the sole purpose and the entire responsibility of sex is to create new life. It occurred to me in that moment that I would like us, as people of progressive faith, to share some opinions of our own. That I would like us to say that it is possible to recognize that there are many reasons for sex and for birth control. To remind people that in a culture trapped in the binaries of sex phobia and sex saturation, there is precious little space for real conversation or for the complexities and the magic of real life. Because here is a truth. In avoiding a larger conversation about sex, we are, in fact, allowing a discussion about birth control, including abortion, to frame our views of sexuality, rather than vice versa. Unitarian Universalism, our faith, has a scriptural and scientific basis for a strong claim on the sacred gift of healthy sexuality. These are claims that we offer to our people and indeed to the world through the Our Whole Lives curriculum. The content of those courses, has anyone here gone through OWL or had a family member go through OWL? Awesome. The content of those courses is deeply linked to our faith, to the values of respect for self and for other, of justice and equity in human relationships. It's linked to care for one another and for our world, to integrity and to accountability. These OWL values pull away from the consumption, restriction, dichotomy of sexualization and toward sex positivity. Sex positivity is a way of relating to our bodies, to our sexuality, and to one another that places health, enjoyment, and consent at its core. And it's important that I pause here and note some things. Our movement, our denomination, has tried to find the higher ground in conversations about sexuality. And the truth across decades, across generations, right up to now, is that we have been just as fallible as other faiths. The truth is that part of this conversation has to be a recommitment to some boundaries, that throwing them away rather than renegotiating some lines and some limits is only a pathway to harm. Power analysis matters. Honoring our promises to one another matters. Honoring the sanctity of other people's relationships matters. And I do not have this all figured out. I am not sure that any of us do. But I am sure that we don't get to make decisions based on ourselves alone if our goal is health and wholeness in relationship. And sex positivity does not necessarily mean in favor of sexual intercourse. It means being sexually educated and making the choices that pull toward health, wholeness, and joy, given individual needs and mutuality in relationships. It can be hard to believe in 2019, but sex positivity is still pretty radical. But it's potentially a game changer. And changing this game matters. Last month, in a series of horrific and intentionally timed state legislative decisions, an attack was made on the personhood and futures of women, particularly women in poverty. And that attack did not begin in those legislative chambers, and it is so important that we know this. That night, back in the coffee house in Lawrence, youth pastor Josh moved his conversation effortlessly toward a series of political actions to be made in the name of his faith. In the OB exam room, for example, no one should be allowed to ask if a pregnancy is planned. No one can plan pregnancies. That's God's job. And that question is a first step toward abortion counseling. And, he asserted, we need to also think very carefully about what it's saying when we make birth control widely available. It shouldn't be. Birth control should be an option of last resort. Birth control, an option of last resort. The move to limit access to birth control is about controlling and enforcing social norms. With progressive values on the defensive, we are allowing this conversation to be defined by someone else's agenda. It is true that we should fight back legislatively by giving generously to Planned Parenthood. If we can, by stocking the morning after pill in places like our churches, by serving as parking lot accompaniment for women who need to seek abortions, and by supporting the heck out of those brave enough to provide abortion services in this current climate. But there is also something we need to do proactively, a thread abandoned by faith and then by progressives. It's something apolitical but purely seditious. It's risky, but only in that it asks us to confront our own shame. It's free. And I deeply believe that it has the power to make a difference. We, as people of faith, need to acknowledge that to truly talk coherently and responsibly about abortion means speaking coherently and ethically about sex. What do you believe ethically speaking, about sex? What is your moral basis for your thoughts on sexuality? If you haven't considered that question carefully, you need to. This is an emergency. When people of progressive faith speak honestly, frankly, and also publicly about sex, one thing that we might say is that sex is not just about procreation. We might unashamedly remind ourselves and our policymakers that it never has been. And we might assert also that this statement, that sex is not just about human reproduction, that it's a religious claim. It is a faith truth that we have a right and a responsibility born of radical self-love to a healthy sex life. And it is a social truth that some political leaders in our country seek to take that away, particularly from women, from trans and non-binary people, from queer folk, from the poor. That is what is underneath all of this, a gambit to control sexuality, and in so doing, to control groups and classes of people. And our own don't ask, don't tell progressive faith policy around this subject is allowing the terms of morality to be defined in ways that are against our religion. The good news, though, is that to pull towards something better, we may just need to be a little bit more real. The late liberation theologian Marcella Altaïs Reed urged heterosexuals to come out of the closet in discussing and claiming their sexuality. She didn't mean that all heterosexuals are gay. What she did mean was that what it means to be straight, according to the rules of straightness, is not, in fact, how most heterosexuals actually live or understand themselves or their sexuality. Altaïs Reed, in her book, Indecent Theology, which I absolutely recommend to you, said that heterosexual folk aid the cause of liberation by being their authentic heterosexual selves, because it complexifies the conversation and makes brave space to be honest in a way that straightness as a label and as a commodity was never designed to. Altaïs Reed found that an honest heterosexuality could aid liberation for the queer community and also aid freedom in general. And credit where it is due, Marcella Altaïs Reed was making an argument that heterosexual liberation aids queer liberation. But a truth of my own life is that being adjacent to the queer community is part of what has given me permission to be realer and to demand more. We all get free together. And talking more openly about sex and sexuality addresses the root causes of our shame where they start, so that the topic isn't so likely to cause us to freeze, and it also helps us to humanize whoever we are being so carefully taught to view as other, those whom the current narratives say should be controlled because their bodies, their sexuality, their freedom, their lives are dangerous. Let's courageously name who those people are. They include single moms, women in poverty, women who use birth control and want it to be covered by insurance, women who consider abortion, women who have an abortion. It includes trans women, lesbian women, bisexual women, and gender nonconforming people. And as we stake a claim on broadening this dialogue, one important point is that those who identify as women are not the only ones who have abortions, and they are also not the only ones who are helped by Planned Parenthood in their sacred, holy mission. I went to Planned Parenthood, as the meme says, and all I got was a breast exam, a pap smear, a physical, STD testing and treatment, information and counseling about my sexual and reproductive health, cancer screenings, a pregnancy test, prenatal services, and access to affordable birth control. Right. Being realer about what Planned Parenthood does for our communities should be part of this conversation. And being realer about some other things, things that we are tempted to take any edge away from, to render settled, uninteresting, and therefore harmless. This is part of the work as well. Quoting the Reverend Kendall Gibbons, there is no way to make these issues harmless. They just aren't. And therein lies their magic. In our relationships with one another, the places where we bring our full selves, we are reaching for something desirable, something holy and healthy. And where sexuality is concerned, it can be a challenge to figure out how to lean toward those three things simultaneously: the desirable, the holy, the healthy. And there is an edge here. The beguiling truth is that any form of contact with the holy is dangerous. We can visit the edge, but there is an abyss attendant. And there is an abyss not only with sexuality, but with abortion. There are real things that we need to be able to say on this topic, and perhaps we can find the space in our hearts and minds and relationships to say them, once we have stopped assenting to the policing of the sexualities of those with less power. When we stop asserting that sin, selfishness, and fear of God's will are any of what's truly at issue here. What real things might you need some space to wrestle with about abortion? I'll share some of mine. First, that abortion is not the same as birth control. It is costly in all of the ways. Whether to give or take life is a question that brings us right to that terrible magic of the abyss. And it's not a place to live. Abortion cannot be our first resort. Second, abortion really isn't anyone's first resort. No one, and I am so confident about this, no one makes this decision unthoughtfully. And it is often not regretted. Not always, but often. But that doesn't mean it isn't wrenching. Not because we have to accept guilt as penance, but because transacting with the holy asks us to count the costs of our decisions. Another thing I might courageously tell you is that I personally and what is called consistently pro-life. It's somewhat unusual in our movement. What I mean with that label is that I am against the death penalty. I am against anyone finding out that they are pregnant and having immediately to weigh whether they can afford to have a child. I am against people wondering if childcare and its availability needs to be the limiting factor on their parenthood decisions. I am against concentration camps of children and families at our borders. I am against the things that take humanity away from those of us who are living in this world. I am consistently pro-life. And I might tell you that I have nevertheless considered abortion for myself personally. I could share also that this year, as a Unitarian Universalist parish minister, I was asked for the first time to accompany someone else to an abortion. I could share that I wasn't sure how I would feel, that it was a scary place of ministry, and that I did a lot of spiritual work ahead of time to make sure that I would be able to be fully present. I should tell you also that the scary place was in my own head and heart. It sure wasn't at Planned Parenthood. How I actually felt on that morning, that very early morning, was proud and fiercely protective and so profoundly grateful for the courageous legacy handed forward across generations that mean safely continuing a life of worth and meaning is a possibility for people in our communities. There was no sin and no selfishness. And if there was fear of God's will, it is only because we have mistaken ourselves as human emissaries of judgment. I am still consistently pro-life, and that means a deep respect for your life and for the sacredness of the choices that you have to make as you live it. When it comes to this conversation, I am willing to be out of the closet. I am a living, breathing set of contradictions, and I am determined to live into those faithfully. And if you choose to do that alongside you, in covenant, accountable to my relationships and to yours too, accountable to the holy and to what we might yet be together. Abortion is not an issue. It is rights and lives and real people clamoring for recognition of worth and integrity. It is balancing, as did that decision, Roe v. Wade, that which cannot be balanced. I am going to continue to stretch myself on this topic, and it will continue to be uncomfortable. Stretching is not a process that makes things feel less fraught or that numbs us to reality. In this conversation, we touch both a great sadness and a great mystery. The sadness and mystery go too often unacknowledged, even in progressive faith, because we know that there is power in the pain, and we fear it. It could someday for you be a choice. It could someday for you be a child. It could someday be your family. If so, I am trusting you to make your decisions, to live with them, and to make sense of them in the best way you know how, because my religion says so. Amen.